Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest both hours, and it's Ask Me Anything. If you want to ask Joe a question, dial 888-318-7884. We always have a lot of fun on these Ask Me Anything shows. And Joe, because, you know, he's getting more and more, I don't know what the word, for lack of a better word, popular. I mean, I don't know if it's a popularity contest, but if it is, he's pulling ahead because he's very popular on Shameless Popery, his podcast, Shameless Popery. As a matter of fact, we were at the SEEK conference earlier in this month, and I think about 1 million young people came up to Joe to talk with him about Shameless Popery, his podcast. Ask me anything if you want to know about Jesus, you want to know about the church, you want to know about the moral life, the Bible, 888-318-7884. Welcome, Joe Heschmeyer.
It's good to be here. And you know what?
What?
I got to say, you know, it's really good for one's humility. Going to the SEEK conference at the same time as Trent Horn, because you're like, oh, wow, 20 people talk to me. And then you see Trent and it's just like every living person in Salt Lake City was like in an orderly queue to talk to Trent. And it was great. I mean, it's honestly really great to see this many people know about Council of Trent and all the good work that he's doing. But it's also a good reality check not to let it go to my head.
You know, what's even more humbling to go to SEEK with both you and Trent.
I've never had the experience.
I think I sold one book. And what did I sell it for, Edgar? I sold it for a chicken strip. This lady said, I'll give you a chicken strip if you'll give me your book. And it looked good, so I gave her the book for the chicken strip. Were you there for that,
Joe? Basically the modern version of Esau.
That's basically it. Yeah, right. I sold my inheritance for some porridge.
Yeah, not even good porridge. It's like lentils. It's like,
but I had to do it. She had really hairy knuckles. So I, sorry. Bible reference. That's not really true.
This is why no one wants to talk to you at SEEK, because they're afraid you're going to tell them that they have hairy knuckles on the air.
No, she did not. She did not. But I did actually do that. I signed the book for her, too. She did not sign the chicken strip, but I ate it.
That's probably good that she didn't sign it.
No, like Trent sells his books for money. I got to sell mine for chicken strips to get one person to talk to me.
I mean, money is just an in-between step to get to chicken strips.
That's an excellent point. It's just a medium of holding value till you can get to the chicken strips.
Exactly.
888-318-7884. I know you got some exciting stuff coming up this week, so I just want to real quick, while we're processing calls, get you to tell me about what you're doing this week.
Yeah, I've got actually two exciting things coming up. Tomorrow, if you are on YouTube and you go to the Answering Adventism channel, I'm going to be in a debate about what happens to the soul when we die. And then on Friday, so yes, tomorrow at 7 p.m. Central. So it'll be, you know, right at the end of this show tomorrow. So it's a nice transition. We're not competing. And then Friday, a fellow by the name of Jimmy Akin and I are going to be over on Cameron Bertuzzi's show, Capturing Christianity, to respond to some claims. Wes Huff, who was just on the Joe Rogan show, did a great job of defending Christianity. But he's a Protestant who makes some false claims about like where the Bible comes from and how we get the books in the Bible that we've got. And so kind of responding to some of the things where we're going to disagree, even though on 97% of things, we're probably going to see eye to eye on a lot of the stuff that he does. Those two things are both coming up.
All right. Check them out. Also, check out Joe's YouTube page. Or if you want to find Shameless Popery, just go to shamelessjoe.com or look for Shameless Popery wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am anxious to get to the phones because they're all full. I think we better let people ask Joe questions. So let's go to Bellevue, Nebraska. Ricky, listening on our website, catholic.com. Glad you're here, Ricky. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thank you for taking my call. Joe, my question is kind of a two-parter, but it's pretty basic. I'm sure you've gotten it before. The first part is, why isn't there an infallible translation? How does the magisterium function in regards to Bible translation? And then the second part is, how does infallibility relate to textual variance?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Short answer is languages, particularly living languages, it's functionally impossible to have what you might call an infallible translation because the meaning of words kind of change over time. So what a word means in one generation might shift and sometimes might even be dramatically different. There's an apocryphal story of St. Paul's Cathedral being called in 1710 awful, amusing, and artificial. And the joke is in 1710, those things would all be like compliments, but now all of those words are negative. Or like the word nice just used to mean stupid, and now it has like a positive connotation. So words can kind of change in meaning pretty dramatically as we, you know, don we now our gay apparel. It's, these things can kind of shift in how they're understood. So the idea that the Magisterium or anyone else could translate the Bible into all of the different languages of the world and keep all of the shades of meaning and have those, you know, connotations and everything stay the same from generation to generation just isn't how language works or how translation works. So as a result, yeah, there isn't, you know, sometimes you'll find like King James Version only Protestants, this is the French within Protestantism, but it exists, who will argue that the KJV is an inspired translation. Nothing in scripture claims this, you know, there's going to be an inspired English translation, but it's based on this idea that, you know, God wants his people to have his word. So you get kind of the impetus behind it. You could similarly make the same argument, I suppose, for the Latin Vulgate. This is, you know, for 1,000 years, the ordinary people, you know, people often think of Latin as a very scholarly language. Originally, Latin was the language of the people. And so you can imagine a world in which the Holy Spirit continued to inspire translations of the Bible. There is no claim in Christianity that this happens other than, you know, among some French groups. Nevertheless, we still know what God is communicating. That even if there are slight textual variations, even if there are, you know, two or three different ways of translating a particular word, it's not at a level where I don't know how to love God or I don't know how to love my neighbor. These are much more kind of minor issues. So you have just one example, but a pretty famous one. The beginning of John's gospel says, "In the beginning was the Word." And that's a good translation of the Greek word logos, but the Greek word logos is much richer than our word. And, you know, similarly, when we talk about the different words for love, agape, philia, and the like, you're going to lose some of the nuance in a way that you just can't get around. Like, we don't have a set of English words that perfectly correspond to all of the different Greek words, storge and the rest, for love. And we don't have any word in English that perfectly corresponds to logos. So your choices at a certain point are just to, you know, leave it untranslated. But if you do that with the whole thing, you don't have a translation at all. Or translate kind of to the best of your ability. That's just an inherent difficulty with the nature of language.
What do you think, Ricky?
Yeah, no, that was a lot to chew on there, Joe. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This is, by the way, also why, you know, the church hasn't just said this is like the one Bible translation to use, because sometimes it can actually help to look at two different translations side by side, and you get more of a gist of what the underlying meaning is.
Ricky, again, thank you very much. That'll take us right to the first break. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. You can ask him anything. 888-318-7884.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The blood of Jesus shed on the cross healed all our wounds. A lot of people say, well, I can do what I want. I can commit any sin. Jesus saved me. You can't be presumptuous. All holy God cannot allow you to sin or give you the right to sin by dying for you. That doesn't make any sense.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Joe, will you do me a favor, please?
I would be happy.
Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. You can call 888-318-7884, ask him whatever you like. But I'm going to read the script for the ad that Carrie gave me. I just would just like you to rate me on a rating of 1 to 10.
All right.
All right.
A lot of, by the way, I want to say a lot of Carrie's scripts are smooth like butter, and they're just gold. They're just Carrie gold butter.
Oh, do you see what he did there? How long did you work on that?
Moments.
Just moments. It's a great talent, or is it a curse? Well, let's leave that.
It is a blessing for me and a curse for everyone who comes in contact with me.
Is it a blessing for you? Let's just leave that question hanging there. I'm going to read the whole script word for word. You ready? I want a rating 1 to 5 on how well I read it because I haven't read it before.
1 to 5. Okay.
I'm reading it. Yeah. No, 1 to 10. I'm sorry. 1 to 10. Right. I'm reading it cold. So. Do you have your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers yet? Why not? I mean, really, why not? Reader Joy says, this book helps to explain our faith in a way that an average Catholic like myself can understand. It covers the topics we need to address with our friends that have issues with our faith. 5 stars. This book may be big, but the answers are brief, crisp, to the point, and accessible to any reader. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is a perfect resource for sharpening your own understanding of your faith, or for sharing with friends who are seeking to understand more about what we believe and why. All the answers you're looking for, all in one place. Visit shop.catholic.com today and pick up your copy. Use the promo code BIGBOOK and you save 25%. Shop.catholic.com. 1 to 10, how'd it do?
I'm going to give that an 8. That was pretty good.
That was an 8.
I really like the phrase reader joy. I know you didn't put that in there, but it took me a moment to realize that this was a reader named Joy.
Yeah.
And not just you're claiming that this will cause reader joy.
Right. I could have read that to make that clearer. I don't know.
No, but I think that's on Carrie. But, Carrie, if you're listening.
I feel good about an 8 out of 10.
Yeah,
I feel pretty good about an 8 out of 10.
You delivered that pretty well.
All right. Wayne in Middletown, Ohio, watching on YouTube. Thank you for waiting, Wayne. Go ahead with your question for Joe Heschmeyer.
Thanks for taking my call. Joe, it's a pleasure. Sorry, you too, sir. I don't have hairy knuckles.
You'd be welcome even if you did, but okay.
I'm going through OCIA, and one thing that I haven't been able to understand yet is consecrating myself, I'm assuming, to the Lord, but through a saint or Blessed Mother. So could you help me understand consecration and if it's necessary?
Yeah, very simply, it is not necessary, but is a just kind of taking someone as a spiritual guide. You know, St. Paul says, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. And so one of the reasons that the saints are given to us is to kind of serve as a model where we kind of entrust ourselves, not taking us away from Christ, but showing us how to live the Christian life. Because there's one thing Christ can't show us how to be in his own person, and that's a disciple, because he isn't a disciple. And I mean, it sounds very strange to say this, but Jesus doesn't have faith. Because faith is belief in things unseen, and Jesus sees everything. And so one of the reasons we look to Mary and the saints is to help us learn how to be faithful disciples. You know, Jesus can tell us about it. They show us what it looks like to put that in action. And there's something very biblical about that. You know, for example, Hebrews chapter 11 gives one after another example of figures from the Old Testament who lived by faith. And the point there is to show us, okay, we can talk about faith, but if you want to know what it looks like, okay, live this out. And I think all Christians intuit some sense of that. You know, there's a reason why, I don't know, say something like Chicken Soup for the Soul is an inspiring devotional series of books, because people want to see, what does it look like when you actually live Christianity? Or people will have, you know, even within the Protestant world, they maybe wouldn't call it a devotion, but they'll have a sort of devotion to figures like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, or, you know, those people who really stood up for the faith in a radical sort of way. Well, we're doing something similar where we say, okay, this person has shown that they know what it looks like to live this spiritual life. But more than that, we also believe that they are still alive in heaven and interceding for us. And so we're looking to them both as a guide and teacher in terms of what they've done, but also as someone who is currently in that great cloud of witnesses that is both witnessing to us and interceding on our behalf before the throne of God. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe I just need a little more explanation. Not that you did a bad job. I'm gonna have to do my part and look into it more. So, okay. No, you did great. I just I don't know. I feel like there's something I'm missing, but maybe it's just my brain hasn't wrapped around everything you said yet. Because sometimes when I watch your videos on YouTube, I have to watch a couple parts a few times before.
I appreciate multiple views, so
that's why he does it. It's
understandable, and you know, for many people, especially if you're coming from a Protestant background, there are certain aspects of Catholicism that are just foreign, and as like any foreign custom, they can seem kind of weird. You know, when I hear British people say lorry when they mean to say truck, it's like, oh, okay, you know, it's an easy mistake, but. You know, those sort of things, you just kind of adjust to a different way of kind of describing things. And in this case, we're using kind of the language and concepts of consecration in a way that may be foreign. But I think when you explain what's really going on, people usually don't have a huge problem with it.
Wayne, I'd like to send you a book. I've got three of Joe's books sitting here next to me. The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, The Eucharist Is Really Jesus, and Pope Peter. Which one would you like?
To be honest, it doesn't matter. You don't have to send me a book because I already do believe that Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist. And I do believe that the Catholic Church was the church that Jesus established. So I'll let you choose on that one, sir.
All right. I tell you what, then. I'm going to go with Pope Peter. I'm going to send you Pope Peter. hang on, and Edgar will get an address, and we'll send it to you. Wayne, as you go through, I think you said OCIA. It's just funny. They're the same thing, but some people say RCIA. Some people say OCIA now, depending on what the pastor says, I guess.
They changed it from RCIA to OCIA, from my understanding.
Yeah, because that really needed to be fixed. And
I mean, technically, it is an ordo and not a rite, so I get it. Yeah, it's just one of those things where
I'm really glad
if you're at a stage where you care whether it's RCIA or OCIA, you don't need to
simmer
be
down.
There.
Simmer down. All right, but call back, Wayne. We'd love to talk to you again. I got to scold Joe for a minute. Oh, you know, we have listeners in Great Britain. You know that EWTN
is
in.
I want them to call in. If they can figure out how to dial the +1 or 001 or whatever else.
If they can figure it out.
Put it on the top of the queue, and then they can talk about how great the word lorry is.
Man, you just don't. I was giving you a chance to walk it back, but you were like, nah, I'm not walking this back. What do you have against the British?
I mean, well. We don't have. We've got a short.
Man!
I love British Catholics.
All right, can I ask you about other countries? What you've got against them? We just go around the world and see what you've got against each country.
I'm really enjoying my last episode of the show.
Now let me get on to Filipinos. All right, Manny is in Sacramento, California, watching on you. By the way, if you're listening in the Philippines, it's Thursday morning. I know you're just getting up. It's early. I was only joking. We have nothing against Filipinos.
I will even go one step further.
Most Filipinos.
There's a place in San Diego that serves some sort of weird fusion of Mexican and Filipino food, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It has been like you couldn't put an ad on TV that would do more to convince me to go to the Philippines than that restaurant does.
Yeah. Filipino food is really good advertisement for the Philippines. All right, onward. We're enough talking about Ponce.
Yes,
let's go to Manny in Sacramento, California, watching on YouTube. Manny, go ahead with your question for Joe.
Thank you. My question is regarding an apparent contradiction in Genesis 35. Mm-hmm. Verse 16 says Benjamin was born in Canaan. But in verse 26, it says that he was born in Padan Aram. And I was trying to search through articles. I haven't found anything that explains it. So I was wondering what you thought about that.
Ah, I see. Okay, interesting. They are, I want to say they're in Padanaram for all of the sons being born. Actually, Benjamin is the only one who's technically not born there because he's born on the way to Bethel. But Padanaram, I mean, it's on the road. I don't remember exactly where it is geographically, but I doesn't seem like it would be a contradiction for the simple fact that it's within a few verses. So wherever Padanaram is, it clearly is being understood in the context of Genesis 35 itself as in Canaan. In fact, well, there you go, actually. Verse 6 describes this area as being part of Canaan.
Are you okay, Manny? It seemed like that information. Are you still processing? Manny?
Oh, I think it got cut off for a moment.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. I was just wondering about that. I guess some people in the documentary hypothesis sphere says that it is a contradiction because it's sort of like two different authors implementing their own side of the story, so to speak. But
just more broadly, I think that the documentary hypothesis is very weak on the whole. So I'll give you an example, because we're talking about the birth of Jacob's children. If you were to ask me where my children were born, I would tell you Kansas City. If you were to get really specific and I were to tell you like the birth story, they were born in the suburbs of Kansas City. And so I might tell you Olathe one day, I might tell you Kansas City the next day, and it's only a contradiction to someone who doesn't know how conventional language works. And the documentary hypothesis, looking at what appears to be a unified text, seeing someone speak in what appears to be the ordinary ways people speak, then theorizes, well, this couldn't all be written by one person. It must be written by multiple people. And the whole thing just doesn't make a lot of internal sense. John Bergsma has a great book on this. What's it called? Murmuring Against Moses, The Contentious History and Contested Future of Pentateuchal Studies. And he talks about just how weak this kind of hypothesis is and raises a lot of concrete objections to the documentary hypothesis. And there's a very funny bit in the beginning of the book. So it's a very serious scholarly book, but he begins the book with a funny anecdote about a 1998 essay by David Klines called New Directions in Pooh Studies, like Winnie the Pooh, Überlieferungs, and I can't do all the German, but it's trying to apply the documentary hypothesis tools to the work, like the book Winnie the Pooh, and showing these what appear to be contradictory things said about Winnie the Pooh must therefore have been written by different people and at different places, different phrases are attached to Winnie the Pooh. And you could come up with an equally elaborate set of imagined authors. But it would be an absurd kind of conclusion. It's clearly one author describing the same character in different ways, including ways that are nuanced and might in isolation look contradictory. And the point there, it's a very funny way of kind of presenting it, is that's just how any authorship works. Like, you could do this same thing to tear apart any unified literary work and imagine any number of authors. But Genesis doesn't look like it was written by a committee or by, four different authors loosely tied together. And so it's a weak sort of theory. Another sign that it's a weak theory, I would suggest, is that there's no longer just one form of the documentary hypothesis. It used to be just four authors, JDEP, and then you got more and more and more and more authors, and no consensus on who wrote which parts. And the whole thing starts to look very ad hoc, very arbitrary, very much like individual scholars just making it up as they go. All of those are signs this is probably not the strongest academic kind of theory. I don't think you'd find that stuff applied to almost any other work in history and, take it very seriously. I don't know why it's been allowed to kind of survive as long as it has in biblical studies departments, because I just don't think there's a lot of heft to it intellectually.
Manny, I'm going to leave it there and try to get as many on as I can with Joe. Thank you very much for the call. Noah is in Texas listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Thanks for downloading our app. Noah, go ahead with your question.
Well, first of all, let me just say Joe thinks that you got an 8. No, I give you the solid 10. That was perfect.
Boom! That's right. That's right, Noah. All right, hang on for your free book.
Everything's bigger in Texas, including apparently grading on
great inflation.
Including a score. Okay, so I go to a Protestant school, and we have worldview, which is essentially just history with a biblical standpoint. And we just got to the point where we got to the Great Schism. And there were many things I was interested in, like what it all was around, because we have it here in our notes. It's about how, like, there are disagreements on icons and on a filioque, and how that the Catholic Church implemented the filioque into the Nicene Creed without the permission of the Orthodox Church, as well as papal authority. The Orthodox did not really like that before they split. So I'm just wondering, how can we, like, decipher through all of this whenever the evidence seems a little bit against us?
All right.
Yeah. Noah, can I answer that on the other side of the break?
Can you hang on a minute, Noah? Because we're coming up right against the break.
Definitely.
All right. We'll get to what are the causes of the Great Schism right after this with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
From its earliest days, Catholic faith has been lived by a yearly cycle of feasts and seasons. The new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, Feasts of Our Fathers, is a one-stop companion for praying and meditating through the holy days and seasons of the church with help from the most ancient Christian people. Don't just read about the early saints, pray with them. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers now at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore. The person of Jesus and the Trinity to modern questions of morals, whatever it is, 888-318-7884. Noah, a person of incredibly good taste in Texas, called and wants to know what's the impetus, what's the power, the energy behind the Great Schism? What caused that?
Yeah, and he cited several different things. One of those was icons, which there were controversies about icons in the 8th century, but that wasn't one of the causes of the East-West Schism. The Orthodox and the Catholics are both cool with icons. The so-called iconoclasts were defeated in the 8th century, so we don't even, like, that's just not one of the issues. But the other things that he mentioned were real issues. There were controversies over even things we would regard as seemingly trivial matters today. So, for instance, the East uses leavened bread for the Eucharist. The West uses unleavened bread, and both have theological justifications for doing it. I think there's actually decent evidence that the Western practice is older, for what it's worth, but we would regard both as valid. But you had some in the East say, no, you have to use leavened bread, and, you know, calling into question even like the validity of the Eucharist because we didn't have yeast in our bread. So you have those kind of things. A bigger issue was the filioque, partly because of some issues between the Latin and the Greek, where the, you know, the Greek, it made it sound more like the Holy Spirit was partially from the Father and partially from the Son, whereas it's much clearer in the Western use of filioque. So you'll notice filioque is a Latin word, not a Greek one. It's that the Holy Spirit proceeds from the Father through the Son. So we're not claiming the Father is like the half originator. He is the exclusive originator, but he originates the Holy Spirit from all eternity and breathes him, as it were, through the Son, what's called his spiration. So you'll find occasionally Eastern Orthodox to object to it on, you know, nuanced theological grounds. But I don't think that's plausibly why ordinary Eastern Orthodox on the street were kind of up in arms over East-West issues. A lot of them were just, frankly, ethnic tensions between Greek-speaking and Latin-speaking people, and there were plenty of bad actors in both directions. And it's a very messy and kind of complicated issue. And then concretely, you have questions about the limit of the Pope's authority and the Pope's jurisdiction. So you have kind of pushback with that as well. On the filioque, the one thing I haven't mentioned is you'll hear this line that the West added it to the Nicene Creed, which is actually kind of incorrect. By that I mean, what we call the Nicene Creed, despite its name, is not actually from the First Council of Nicaea. Like, if you read the canons of Nicaea, you don't find the Nicene Creed as we pray it. You find, like, the framework for it, but it's at the First Council of Constantinople, which is where we actually get the Nicene Creed, and in the form that we know it, sans the filioque. But between the First Council of Nicaea and then the First Council of Constantinople in 381, you have different local creeds. And so the best evidence suggests that the filioque was being used before the First Council of Constantinople had kind of a uniform creed. And so people continued to use the variation that has and the Son. And eventually, you know, the popes in the West started using it as well to combat heresies that weren't being dealt with in the East. Meaning, like, different people emphasize different theological aspects. Theologically, we should be on the same page about the nature of the Father, Son, and Spirit. And then it just becomes the question of, well, did they have the right to continue to use regional creeds? And did they have the right, you know, did the Pope have the right to use a version of the Nicene Creed that wasn't approved by an ecumenical council? And I think most people, if you're being honest, would say, you can use a creed that hasn't been explicitly endorsed by an ecumenical council. Like, that is something that is okay to do. Like, the Apostles' Creed was not given to us by an ecumenical council, and it's okay to pray the Apostles' Creed. So this, you know, dispute that we're not allowed to use the filioque unless an ecumenical council endorses it is, I think, sort of an uphill battle, but it is one of the things to recognize where it was and is one of the concrete areas people will point to the West allegedly overreaching.
What do you think, Noah?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I read Answering Orthodoxy before I went to school, and I was like, oh, I got this. I can like rebut this if they ask me, if any of my students ask me, and then I get there, I'm like, that wasn't in the book. But yeah, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things where if you look back at the history, you read like some of the even things being written in ecumenical councils, and you'll see that there's just a lot of like pettiness going back and forth. And sometimes you have like violent ethnic cleansing kind of riots. That's not great. Like you have in Constantinople an anti-Latin kind of push in the early 1200s. Then you have the Fourth Crusade in 1220 where you have Constantinople being sacked. And it's just like that kind of ugly tension. There's a great myth. Last thing I'll say here, there's a great myth that 1054 is like the final separation of the East and West. And that's not actually true. That's an oversimplification of a very complicated history. The East and West didn't consider themselves completely in schism from one another for several centuries after that. They were certainly like fighting. There was a lot of, but it was viewed more as in-house fighting. And so the actual final schism really isn't until like the 1400s. And it becoming solidified has as much to do with kind of the Ottoman conquest of Constantinople, where Eastern Orthodoxy sort of falls under Islamic rule and stops being organized enough to continue to pursue reunion with the Catholic Church. But the last things you see, like, for example, the Hagia Sophia was in union with the Pope at the time that it's taken in the 1400s, which is something people don't often know about this history. Like, there's, for hundreds of years after 1054, you have these attempts, sometimes more successful than others, to restore and repair the kind of wounds to union.
Noah, I'll tell you what, I'm going to leave it there because the lines continue full and we've got Thomas the TikTok engine here with us. But if you'd like a Joe Heschmeyer book, I'd like to give you one, especially because you gave me a 10 to start the call. excellent move on your part. Just tell Edgar which of Joe's books you would like and we will send it off to you. All right. Thomas the TikTok engine is here from TikTok, where he answers the world's questions about the Catholic faith. Sometimes he brings them to the apologist here on this show, and we get to hear the question and the answer on the show, and then he takes it back to TikTok and straightens the world out. Hello, Thomas the TikTok engine.
Hi, Cy. You might have to do the whole nickname generation bit again if TikTok does indeed get banned in the coming weeks.
I'll believe it when it happens. Do you think it's going to happen?
See, that's what I would say every time, but this looks like it's actually as close as it's ever going
to
get.
So think they'll ban TikTok, and then you're going to have a new name, or yeah, are you going to get
fired?
You can
almost hear the clock, right?
I'm not even going to.
I know, just ignore it.
Yeah,
ignore
we'll need to.
Can
we'll
we mute Joe when we're talking? Is there any way we can mute Joe so we don't have any puns?
At least when we.
It's just a joke. Don't.
At least when we come up with a topic that lends itself so easily to puns, I think we need to just let Joe.
Wait, so will you be fired from your job if TikTok goes out of business?
Oh,
will we lose you?
I hadn't thought of that. I prayed that TikTok would go away, but I didn't think that that consisted of the entirety of my job position here. So maybe I should cool it a little bit on that. No, I'm not going to be fired because every other platform
Thomas the X engine, the Twitter engine, that'll work. Thomas the Twitter engine.
If it was still called that, you know.
I don't care. I'll call it that. Just so you can keep your job.
I know. Thank you. Every other platform is trying to become TikTok now, though. They all have the short form videos. They all want to do the exact same thing. So I think we can keep running the format and keep generating content that, you know, people still want to see on those platforms.
I remember the day I came up with Thomas the TikTok engine. I was so happy. I knew you were going to say yes to that one. I don't know if you know how this worked, Joe, but I would try out a different nickname on him every time he was on the show. And he said no to all of them. They were all apparently terrible. And then I just knew when I said Thomas the TikTok engine, he was going to say yes. And he did.
Rolled off the tongue. It was a watershed moment.
It was a watershed moment. It was like the Geico, the little Geico lizard. When he invented the 15 minutes, we'll save you 15%. It was a watershed moment.
We should get him on the show.
He's good. That. No, Joe doesn't like British people.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right. I can't blame you then.
Go ahead.
This is partially rooted in fiction.
Partially. I love that he said partially.
I know what you're talking about. The gecko's right there. He's on TV. Like, it's real.
Okay. I have to. I know that we're delaying this, and I'm going to only make myself look worse with this, but I have to share one very fast story. My daughter, who is now 5, when she was like 3, would listen to a lot of Irish music, and she'd want to know what the different stories were about, and they were often about, British oppression. And so one day we're at Mass at Stella Maris Church in San Diego, and outside there's this beautiful large statue of St. Michael defeating Satan. And so as we're leaving in the kind of the courtyard area, I point to the statue and say, Stella, who is that? And she's like, St. Michael. And I'm like, and who is he defeating? And she stops for a second and she goes, the British?
Yes!
Stella.
So with this, I should...
Oh, my
girl.
All right.
That's so good.
I'm not helping my case. There's wonderful... I mean, Elizabeth Anscombe, who is a British Catholic philosopher, is one of my favorite philosophers of all time.
Oh, are you going to do the some of my best friends are British now?
Some of my favorite people are British. I would never have best friends. But
all right. I love the British. Even if Joe hates them,
a couple good bands from the 70s. Got to give it to them.
All right, go ahead, Thomas, the TikTok engine, with your question from TikTok.
All right, we're actually going to work now. So, Joe, this comment was left under a video I posted for All Saints Day. I was talking about a couple different saints and how amazing they are. And one person said, you do know this celebration of the dead, by which I think he meant veneration of the saints, has pagan Roman origins, like all the other pagan infiltrations camouflaged as church traditions. You do know that, right, Joe?
I do not know that. And in fact, anytime someone says, oh, this is a pagan thing, you should do two things. One, try to get them to clarify which pagans they think it is, because you'll hear everything from, oh, this is an Irish custom of Samhain, to, oh, this is some kind of Roman thing, to, this is Isis and Osiris. Like, pagans aren't just like one group. Pagan is like the word foreigner. It just means anyone who's not a Christian. And so blaming things on paganism is like blaming things on foreigners. Like, it's too vague to be an actual accusation. Here, they're at least clear they think it's somehow connected to Romans. So the second thing you should ask is, okay, what evidence do you have for two things? Number one, that the Romans were doing this. Show me an actual pagan source that talks about this. And then number two, show me some kind of link where Christians took this from pagans. Like, it's not enough to say, oh, here's this thing that Christians and various pagan groups have in common. You know, oh, we all eat food. We all celebrate things sometimes. We all like warm candles in the wintertime. Those are not interesting comparisons. If you're going to say something was stolen from paganism, it can't just be it vaguely resembles it. You know, case in point, Jupiter comes from Deus Pater, which means God the Father. That doesn't mean we took that from them or they took it from us. Just could be that two different groups use similar terms for their gods. So surface level similarities aren't where it's at. In the case of All Saints Day, we know very clearly the history of it, and you can trace the history from it being celebrated throughout the church as early as like the mid fourth century. We find Christians in the Mediterranean world celebrating All Saints Day, and then this spreads. And it like celebrated on different dates in Syria and other places. And eventually it's in Germany that we settle upon November 1st as the date. None of this appears to have even the slightest relationship to any of the pagan celebrations it's allegedly cribbing from, whether it's Samhain in Ireland, whether it's, I don't even know what Roman feast day they think this is being taken from. But pagan theories are anywhere from 90 to 100% of the time pure nonsense.
Great, thanks, Joe.
Anywhere from 90 to 100% of the time.
Anywhere.
That's a pretty high.
That's a bold statistics. I'm going to take that back.
Yeah,
to...
I mean, you blame things on paganism when you don't know how history works.
I like that. I'm going to keep that bit.
okay.
I'm going to, take that back to TikTok, and hopefully people see it, you know, in the next couple days before it's gone forever. But if
let
it is...
that be the last thing they see before it goes down completely.
That's right. If it does go down, then they can take refuge to our Instagram account.
I'll just say I broke TikTok.
Yes, Joe, please break TikTok for me, please.
All right, Thomas, the Twitter engine. I'm trying it out. I'm trying to see how it does. We'll take a quick break. Be right back with more Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Father Mike Schmitz. Please join me for Ascension's Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year here on EWTN Radio. We're going through the entire Bible and the Catechism in 365 days. If you've ever wanted to understand what it means to be Catholic and allow those truths to shape your life, this is for you.
Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year with Father Mike Schmitz, tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Joe is the author of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, The Eucharist is Really Jesus, Pope Peter, Defending the Church's Most Distinctive Doctrine in a Time of Crisis. And if those titles don't tell you, Joe will tell you himself. He's a shameless papist. And you can find his podcast, Shameless Popery, wherever you get your podcasts. What kind of stuff have you been doing on Shameless Popery lately? You covering anything cool?
I just had a video yesterday responding to some of Mel Gibson's claims on of vacantism.
Poor Mel.
I think you've got a Mel Gibson little clip of him saying your name, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But there's nobody here in the studio that knows how to find it right now. So, but
and probably not the best time.
I will say this: I've spoken to Mel Gibson once in my life, and he was extremely so gracious that I thought, "Wow, what a gracious person." So I don't want to I don't want to say anything negative.
Well,
about
not only that, he does a good job of proclaiming kind of a personal witness on Joe Rogan's show. There was a lot to like, but intermixed with that, he would talk about, you know, the fake Catholic Church of Pope Francis and had these kind of very strange theories. He wrote an open letter to Archbishop Vigano, commending him on getting excommunicated and saying it was an honor. And, you know, that sort of stuff is spiritually toxic.
Yeah.
And it's okay, I think, acknowledge the good work someone has done and call out when they're drawing souls away from the Church of Christ.
So did you get a good response on the Mel Gibson stuff, or
been a good response, but I think I looked earlier today and it was about 95% likes compared to dislikes, but that is not as good a rate as, you know, ordinarily. Like, people definitely came out in force where they felt very defensive of me attacking Civic Contism and saying, very, very simply, like, I made the argument, if Vatican I is right, that the papacy is a perpetual institution, then you can't simultaneously believe that there's no pope and no valid conclave that can produce a new pope and no cardinals. Like, you end up in a situation where you're claiming that there's not a pope and no way to ever get a pope again.
And is that how you interpreted Mel Gibson's comments on Joe Rogan, that he is a Sede Vacantist?
His father was a very outspoken Sede Vacantist, and there are some questions about sort of the details of his view, but it certainly seems like that. I mean, he said things elsewhere, like his open letter to Vigano was much clearer on rejecting the legitimacy of popes from John the 23rd on, it seemed.
All right, back to the phones we go. Check out all Joe's work at his YouTube channel. Look for Joe Heschmeyer, or go to shamelessjoe.com to find more on Shameless Popery. There's a reason why it's growing every day. It grows in popularity. Ishmael, can I call you Ishmael? Right here in San Diego, listening on John Paul, the great Catholic radio. John Paul, JP2 Catholic radio. Hi, Ishmael.
Hi, everybody calls me Izzy, but that's great. I need a 911 answer, please.
911? This is the wrong number, dude. You called the wrong number. You're going to bleed out. You're not going to make it.
We use spiritual poison control. We don't do anything else.
All right, Izzy, go ahead. Go ahead.
I asked this question before, but I wasn't specific. Let me be very specific.
Okay.
I am dealing with a very popular evolutionist Bible scholar. A henotheist.
What do you mean by that exactly?
A henotheist. I know what that
means. Oh, okay.
Yeah, henotheist. I need to demonstrate to him that monotheism didn't come after polytheism and that only one God exists.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one thing you could do is say there clearly is a practice of the Israelites practicing henotheism and polytheism. I mean, the Old Testament is replete with God telling them not to do that, which suggests that they were doing that regularly. Right? Like, I guess two things. One, we have to sort of define terms, and namely, what do we mean by a God? Because if by a God you mean the uncreated creator of everything, there logically can be only one. You can't have infinite uncreated being and then another infinite uncreated being. Those two things don't make sense. So if that's what you mean by God, the kind of capital G sense of God, then there can only be one. If by God you just mean a powerful spiritual being, there can be many, and there are many. We call them angels and demons. Other cultures have called them by other names, jinn, gods, whatever, demigods. Those things exist. Now, not all of them do. Some of those are, you know, works of fiction. Some of those are human imagination. But without a doubt, like, some of the things people were worshiping really were spiritual beings. St. Paul is crystal clear about that. For instance, in 1 Corinthians 10, when he talks about pagans making sacrifices to demons, what they're calling a god, we call a demon. We recognize its existence. That's not a conflict with monotheism, which talks about God in the capital G sense. So I would just make that point, that one of the things you see clearly laid out in the biblical narrative, and a great place to see this would be, for instance, in the book of Exodus, where you see the superiority of capital G God over the so-called gods of the Egyptians. Look at how the snake of Aaron, and you know when the rod turns into a snake, is able to devour the snakes that the Egyptian magicians are able to do. They have a spiritual power, but it's inferior to the true power of God. You can see this as well in a totally different way in the story of Jonah. Jonah is having trouble fully grasping the fact that God is not just the local God of the Israelites. He's the God of everyone, even the enemies of the Israelites, like the Ninevites. And so as a result, he goes to sea to try to get away from God. But precisely because God is not just this local territorial deity, God is able to find him even on the ocean. And so the whole event of, you know, Jonah and the whale is Jonah coming to grips with the universality of God and the universality of the love of God. And you have this, there's a whole story in this where it seems like it really takes the Babylonian exile for the Israelites to fully understand this. God had been saying this for centuries, and people would turn away and they'd worship other gods. Or when they'd go to a new region, they would worship the local gods. And it's really only after the Babylonian captivity, when they realize that the God of Israel is with them even there, that they seem to be disillusioned of the notion of henotheism and polytheism in any of those senses. So I think that's where I would go with it. But in terms of just the, if you want to call it the sociology of, you know, were people worshiping gods other than the true God? Absolutely. And did some of these gods exist, even though we don't consider them God in the same sense God is? Yeah, also true.
Well, okay. I just, because we believe in one God. So you know how the World Mission Society believes in the Mother of God, Father God.
Oh, sure.
You know, and the same thing, with Mormons. You know, I need to get them to understand that there is no other gods. It's just one God. That's the only thing.
So yeah, this is a little bit of a deep dive of a book, but given your interest in it, it might be helpful. David Bentley Hart has a book called The Experience of God. And he talks about how different cultures understand the concept of God and then compares this to the Christian understanding and then shows that what a lot of atheists are attacking is just a misunderstanding of even the concept of God. And so it's kind of an argument against atheism, but it also contextualizes how we can speak of God in a singular capital G sense and these other spiritual beings, like the Elohim. Sometimes Elohim is used to refer to just the Lord of Lords and God of Gods, you know, the one God of Israel. Other times it's used to refer to the gods or the council of the gods, which we would recognize as angels.
Okay, that's a pretty good answer. And I'm going to look into that book. So I appreciate it. If you can make a good YouTube video on this or a good article for Catholic Answers, that would be awesome.
A message received. I might just do that.
That would be awesome. Izzy, you want to hang on, I'd like to send you one of our books too. It's not the book Joe recommended, but it is a very, very good book. It's called What is God? It's by Dr. Kevin Vost. And it gets into the Catholic understanding of God. That's for your own reading. I think it will help clarify your own thinking about God. But if you'd like it, all you got to do is hang on the line and Edgar will get your information and we will send that book out to you. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Hey, I forgot to remind you of this, but Society 315 all this year is giving away the Halo app for new signups to Society 315. So if you want to sign up to Society 315, just go to, well, we have a website, CA Catholic Answers, CASociety315.com, or just Google Catholic Answers Society 315 and it'll take you there. The Halo app, we've partnered with them on a lot of stuff. I think they have some of your content on the Halo app.
I don't know. I recorded some things for Halo and I don't know if they ever were used.
They probably.
Oh, I don't know.
Well,
I haven't seen them, and I haven't looked in a while.
There's tons of great stuff there, and there is some of our stuff. I don't know if Joe's stuff is there, because Joe doesn't know if Joe's stuff is there, but we'd love to give you a free year of the Halo
app. Check out Halo, look for my stuff, and then if it's not there, We'll all very discreetly start raising a letter campaign.
We need to start some kind of thing, like the thing where they got Star Trek back on the air. We need that level of complaining. So go to CASociety315.com. 315 stands, which is it, 1 Peter or 2 Peter? It's 1 Peter 315,
First
right?
1 Peter, yeah.
About being prepared to give a defense for the hope that's within you. Or just search Catholic Answers Society 315 and find out about it. We'd love to give you the Hallow app for the year. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest, and he's going to keep being our guest. He can't get out of it. We've promised him for another hour, so come back. We'll give you some more terrible puns and lots of answers to questions. Something is happening right now that has not happened for the entire show. There's a line open. So if you'd like to call and talk with Joe, 888-318-7884. Coming back, we're going to talk to Eduardo in Florida. We'll talk to Simon in Lubbock, Texas. We're going to Chickasaw, Oklahoma, to talk to Taylor. We'll go to Massachusetts. We'll do all that with Joe Heschmeyer right after this on Catholic Answers Live.